today, so he's coming in.
Okay. Well, thank you. It's a great pleasure to give this lecture. Well, we'll discuss the following things, and I wanted to illustrate these things with a few charts and pictures at the end. But first, we'll discuss point processes. Then, in the second part, we'll discuss Palm probabilities. And Voronoi tessellation. Then we'll discuss the same thing, Palm probabilities and balanced tessellations. I will define all these objects. And at the end, I expect either, if I have time, so already some time has elapsed, so we'll see, to discuss the Boolean model. Okay. And all these things are, in a sense, fundamental objects in the theory of a random object in space, okay, in Euclidean spaces. So we'll indeed limit ourselves to things that happen in Euclidean spaces, but possibly in high dimension. And I will discuss at the end a little bit the applications and the motivations, and you will see some of these applications really require working in very high dimension. So Euclidean spaces, but the dimension being very big. So topic one. So can you, yes, these are these three
Where's files. The mouse has disappeared again.
Okay, let's forget it then. Okay, so we will be interested in M, which is the space of counting measures. We start with point processes, okay? So what is a counting measure? A counting measure is a measure, so and this will all be objects on RD, okay? So it's an element of the set of counting measures, M, will be such that for all A, which is a relatively compact set of RD, you have that the M of A is an integer. Okay, so it's a measure. And for all sets whose closure is a compact set, you want the number, the mass put on the set A to be an integer. That's the definition of a counting measure. And so it's not difficult to see that any such measure belonging to this set M has a representation of the form sum of Dirac at certain point Tn. Okay, Tn's are point of Rd. Okay. And without accumulation. That will be the setting, okay? Because indeed, if there were accumulation, then you couldn't have that for all relatively compact set, the number is finite, okay? Good, so one can put a topology on this space of measures. Let's say on functions, and if you look at the set of functions which are with compact support, and which are continuous. You look at this set of functions, okay? You take for all f, which is continuous and with bounded support, you require that sum of f of x, mu n of x, converges to sum of f of x, mu of x, dx, it's a measure, okay? So if this happens for all f in this set that we call F of compact support continuous functions, then you have a notion of convergence, which is called the vague topology. Once you have a topology, you can take the Borel sigma field with respect to this topology, and so which means that you can make out of this space a measurable space, okay, on which you have the set of all the Borel sigma field with respect to this vague topology. Okay, so you have a good space. It's a space, measurable space, M, and that will be the basic space of counting measures. Okay. Good. A few important things about operations which are measurable operations. So an important operation is the translation of the measure M. So you take T belonging to RD and you define things that way. So ST of M, so ST of M will be ST will transform a measure M into ST of M, which will also belong to M, and this is through the definition that STM of C is simply M of C plus T. Okay, or equivalently, if M is thus the form sum of the delta TN, then STM has the form sum of delta TN minus T. Okay? So it's a shift. You shift in a rigid way all points of the point process of the counting measure of minus t. So it's like taking the whole picture. So you can represent this sum of delta as a cloud, if you want, of points. Okay, and you will shift everything of t, of minus t. Okay, and this will be the ST operation. Good. So it's a measurable operation from M to itself, and so we'll play with it a lot. Good, so that's what a counting measure is. So now you can define what a point process is. A point process will simply be a random counting measure. Okay, so on any space which is a measurable space, you take any omega f, say p, and you take a mapping n, which takes its value in this space, and what you get is a random counting measure, or a random point process. So it's a realization of it. If you take an omega, you will have out of n something that is n of omega, which will be a random cloud of points. Okay, and this is the most simple random geometric object. It's a cloud of points which are randomly located in Euclidean space. Good. So there is a very fundamental example, which is the Poisson point process. So unless you all tell me that you already heard of it in Euclidean spaces, I will define what it is and how to construct it. Are you familiar with the Poisson point process? Okay, good. So a PPP, Poisson point process. Okay, so we give ourselves lambda, which is a Radon measure on RD, and so it's not a counting measure. No, it's really a measure. Okay, and one says, what is a Radon measure? It's a measure which is locally finite, which means it's finite on relatively compact sets. So Radon measure is such that lambda of a set, say B, is finite if B is bounded or relatively compact. That's the definition. Okay, so I give myself this object.
If you still want them there, here.
Good, okay, so you think it will...
Yeah, I just had to do it without a mouse, I just used...
Okay, excellent. Okay, and you put the three files in the top, in the middle here?
I didn't use that, I just copied them all the files that are there are here, and under point processes.
Okay, excellent, thank you. Thank you very much. And so they should be on the screen here, then.
Yeah, you can go to the C drive.
Okay.
And then pull up the USB disk, and they should be there on the point process.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, so I give myself this object, and I will say that N, which is in the class that I said, is a Poisson point process of intensity measure lambda, capital lambda, if the following properties are satisfied. The first one is the independence property. You want that if you take A1 up to AK, first you take K an integer, okay? You take A1 up to AK, which are disjoint Borel sets, okay, of RD, of course. What you want is that then N of A1, so N is a random measure, okay, and you count the number of points it puts in A1. That's N of A1, as you see. in this family, n of a1, n of a2, up to n of ak, is a family of independent random variables, which I will write this way. Okay, so on disjoint sets, the number of points that you find in these sets are independent. And the second property is the Poisson property itself, is that the random variable n of a is Poisson with parameter lambda of a, which means that the probability is that n of a is equal to k is e minus lambda of a to the k divided by k factorial. This is the Poisson law with this parameter. Okay, it's good. And what is amazing is that such an object exists. Okay, such an object exists, and I can say in a few words how to construct it. So when you play with this formula, okay, you discover very quickly that there is if the measure lambda has a finite mass, okay, so if lambda of Rd is finite, you can apply this formula, so to Rd, so the total number of points will satisfy will have a Poisson law. So you will have Poisson number, random number of points. And what you can find out from this formula is that given that there are k points, there will be a number of point k, which is an integer. Okay. Given that there are k points, these k points are independently sampled on Rd with a law. So with a law, which is so out of that. So in the special case where this holds, you have the property that given that n of a is equal to k, the points, the k points, are independent with distribution lambda of dot over lambda of Rd. Okay, so, and you leverage that. So it means, I mean, in particular, if you have now a lambda which doesn't satisfy this property, you will look at the trace measure. Say, you will take any bounded set B. Okay. You look at the trace measure, so the restriction of lambda to B. Then out of that, you can simulate. Then you construct the Poisson point process on a finite window. Okay, what you do is you first sample the number of points according to the law, Poisson law, with lambda of b. Okay, and then conditioning the fact you find k points in this finite window, you take these k points independent and with the same law. Okay, so you have a sort of an algorithm or a mechanism to construct the restriction of the Poisson point process on a finite window. Okay, and then you leverage again this formula to prove another property which is quite amazing, which is that if you take the superposition of two point processes which are Poisson and independent, and what is a superposition? This is just the sum of measures. Okay, so if you have n1 and n2, or even if you have a collection ni belonging to a countable set of independent PPPs, with ni with intensity measure lambda I, if the sum of the lambda I converges to lambda, where lambda is Radon, and this is where the condition which is important, if lambda, which is the sum of lambda, is Radon, then the sum measure, so n, which is the sum of the ni, I belonging to I, is a PPP, a Poisson point process with intensity measure lambda. Okay. And so this is the way to construct, because you will cover R, D by a countable collection of compact sets, which you can, okay, cubes, whatever. On which each of these cubes say your volume one, you can construct the Poisson point process according to the procedure which I said. And then since you have made a partition of RD and look at the, what you will have is that so there will be a lambda I for all I belonging to in ZD. Okay, for instance, you will take BI, which is I plus the cube 0, 1 to the D, something like that, with I an element of ZD. So this is your partition. You simulate, you build a point process on BI, and what you have is that sum of lambda I is equal to the initial measure, or lambda BI. Okay, this is my set BI. Sum of the lambda BI, because it's a partition, will be the initial lambda. And so basically, you have built the Poisson point process on the whole space. Okay? Good, so it exists. It's a nice process. And we will use it in the talk. Okay, so there are, of course, much more general processes, and we will be interested in stationary processes, okay? Stationary point processes. So I give myself N, which is a point process on omega FP, okay? And essentially, I will say that N is stationary if, for all t, you have the probability that N has the property A. I will take an element which is a property of a point process, or property of a counting measure, okay? This is the same as the probability that ST N as the belongs to A. Okay, so this is my the requirement. So it means the following: if I take a realization of my point process, so this is this cloud of points which I depicted. Okay, I shift it in a rigid way, all points simultaneously of minus t for any t, and what I see is a new point process. It should have the same law as the initial one. This is stationarity. Okay. Good. And so it plays the same role as in dynamical system. You see beautiful properties when you have stationarity, and you see very local ones, in particular when you don't. Okay, and so it's easy to see that if you take a Poisson point process of intensity lambda, which is equal to lambda constant times Lebesgue measure, this is Lebesgue measure. Then this point process, this Poisson point process will satisfy this property. So it's quite easy to see, because here you will get a constant times Lebesgue measure, and this thing for just any set will be invariant by translation, but for any tuple of set, you will have the same thing because of the product law. Okay, so that's the first point process which you can build, which is translation invariant and in a sense very simple to handle. This is it's called the homogeneous Poisson point process. Okay, so it lives in all of RD, puts point, and I will show you a picture perhaps if if things work. Okay, good. So we have this, and I'm now in a position to define. So that's my introduction to point processes. I will give a few examples of stationary point processes to start with. Okay, the first one is the hardcore one called it the Matern hardcore point process. So you depart from N, which is a Poisson point process, say a stationary one, with intensity measure lambda, which is lambda times Lebesgue measure. Okay, that's the Poisson cloud, which I. Okay, so this fellow has the representation sum of delta, say Tn. Okay, these are the points of the point process. And out of that, I will build another point process M, which is defined this way. So it's the same points. But I only keep the points Tn such that in a ball of radius, say, r around the point, there are no other points. Okay, so it's a sort of way of clipping the point process. So one, that the number of points in a ball of center Tn and radius r is exactly 1. Okay, so let me draw a picture to explain how it works. So this is a nice point process. So this is a realization of it. Okay, I explain how this is the n. Okay, and now what I will do, I have my ball of radius r. Okay, so I draw a ball around every point, okay, of radius r, and I ask each point the question, is there anybody else in your ball? Okay, so this point, yes, so there is anybody. I discard this point. This point the same by symmetry. This one too. This one too. Okay? What will remain are those points. Okay? Right? So this is the way to and so it's called hardcore. It's hardcore point process, it's hardcore exclusion. Close to a given point. Whatever point you retain in this point process M, okay. Whatever point you retain, you are sure that in a ball of radius r, there will be no other point. Okay? Because the way it's constructed. And so, you have a point process which is stationary n. You select the points based on a sort of translation invariant rule, and therefore the new point process M will again be stationary. And so, this point process exhibits what is called repulsion. Yep. Oh, you can do better indeed. And so I will come back to that at the end when I will discuss information theory, because in many cases you're interested in packing more, okay? But I want to describe simple things. Indeed, you could just discard one of them and then look at a chain of dependencies. That's a very good question. Okay, but for the time being, it's enough for us. But it exhibits hardcore repulsion. So these properties that I said, that I look around, I am a selected point, I look around me, in a ball of radius r, there is nobody, for sure. You can do better if you want to pack more, okay? So sphere packing is, of course, a very big problem of mathematics, which pertains to this question. So repulsion is something clear. And now let's look at attraction. It will just be the other way around. So it's another point process which is stationary and which is quite useful in many problems. This is the Poisson-Poisson cluster. Point process. So I give myself lambda, which is a Radon measure, but actually lambda is a measure. On RD, of course, and all this works on RD, with lambda of RD finite. So it's finite. So okay, and I will take a collection, which I will call MI. It's a collection of independent PPPs, all with low lambda. Okay? Or let's call it MN, okay, for N belonging to N, okay, integers. And in addition, I give myself N, which is an independent PPP, which is homogeneous, of intensity lambda, okay? And so what I will do is the following. I will look at M, now, which is the following thing. So it is the sum over all N of a sum over all k. So this mn, I could represent it as a finite sum over k of delta, say s, delta s n of k. And it will be a finite sum, okay? S n of k. Why is it finite? Because each mn is sampled according to this intensity measure, which has total mass, which is finite. And we have seen that in that case, the total number of points was finite. Okay, and I look at that. Delta Tn plus Snk. So let me draw a picture to see what it does. Just the other way around, it will be a cluster point process. So I have my, say, mother point process, if you want. That's the initial Poisson point process. And is that chalk, color chalk? No, no color chalk. So let's invent color. So there will be around each point a small Poisson cluster, which will be localized if you want. Okay, that's point TN, and this is the small cloud of points of the Poisson. And you see, hence the Poisson cluster stuff seems to be okay. So if you would move to here, to this center, to point TN, what you would see around is one of the small clusters, okay, one of the MN, okay, right. And so you look at the superposition of all this stuff. Of course, it could be that the two clusters interpenetrate. It's very natural, okay? And so here you see, you forget the mother points, and you will look at the dots. And you see something, and this something as clustering. Okay? When you see one point, there will be many around. Okay? Good. Okay, and this, of course, I mean, again, I have a translation invariant point process, N, and then I have these clouds that follow them. Therefore, this construction will be translation invariant, and this point process has clustering, but is translation invariant. Okay? Good, so these are just two very simple examples which you can do with a little bit of... with very little background. There are, of course, much more subtle and interesting point processes, but these ones are good enough for my purpose, which is now to introduce Palm probabilities. Okay, what is this thing? I will define it in a concrete setting, which is that of a so-called ergodic point process. Okay. So I will explain a little bit what it means, but essentially ST is what one calls a flow. We have this probability P, okay, and the assumption will be that this flow and this probability are form an ergodic pair, okay? So I will explain what it means in a second. Okay, so under this assumption, and for instance, all the examples, so you might not know exactly what this means, okay, but all the examples that I have looked at, that I have defined, the Poisson cluster, the Poisson anti-cluster, the one with repulsion, have this property, okay? They are, okay. And so in this case, but more generally for all this class of point processes, there exists a limit when n goes to infinity, that's n is perhaps not the right thing to do, let's call it k goes to infinity, of 1 over the number of points in bk. So bk will be a notation, bk is the ball of center 0 and radius k. Okay, and it will be the sum over point all n, and you will look only at points tn of the point process that belong to this ball bk. Okay, and you will look at this. You will look at those points Tn such that Stn of n has the property A. Where A, so A is any property that a point process may have. So it's an element of the sigma field that I introduced here. Okay, so then this thing, this limit, exists under this assumption P almost surely, and actually is something that one denotes P0 of A. It's a probability. So this will be P0, N will be a probability on M, M script. So it's a law of a point process. Okay. And this will exist. And so, to understand what it means, I will contrast this object. So, it's a thing that follows from ergodic theory. So, it's something rather deep and important. But what I want you to understand is what it means. I will contrast two things. P of A, which is probability, I have my probability space. Probability, you remember, I have omega fp. That probability that n has the property A, and I will contrast that with P0n of A, which is the one that shows up here. Okay. Okay. So what is P of A? So I claim that for a stationary point process, every location of space is equivalent to any other. Okay? So I pick the origin of space, Euclidean space, zero, and I look at the point process from there. I could pick another point of the Euclidean space, and I would see the same law. So this is the law of the point process seen from a typical point of space. Whereas if you look at this one, look at how it's defined. You take a big ball, huge ball, I mean the radius goes to infinity, center is zero, and you go from point to point in that ball, and you check the nth point, okay? What you do is that you place your observer there at the end point, okay? You translate the whole point process such in such a way that the origin is the nth point. That's the STN of n. And you ask the point process there, do you have property A? Okay, the point process seen from point TN. So property A could be, I don't know, in a ball around me, I have of radius 1, I have 5 neighbors. Okay, that would be a nice property to check. Okay, so so what is this? So what this theorem says is that this type of empirical average, where I would count how many points in a huge ball are such that seen from this point in a neighborhood of a given shape, say I have 5 neighbors, this empirical average converges to a probability. And one calls this the law of the point process seen from a typical point. That's what it means. Okay, this empirical average exactly means that. Okay, that's the Palm probability of A. Okay, Palm probability of N. Good. And so now I want to emphasize on my example what it means. Let's take, for instance, the point process with attraction. Okay? Assume I have a rare point process, n, lambda was small, and m was big. The mi's were big. Okay? The mn were big. Okay? So the density is 1. I take a typical location in space. I look around me, I see nobody, okay? Because this lambda is small, so the intensity of n is small. Okay, so it means this thing will be that it's, I look at a very rare point process, and perhaps very far away there are some clusters, but okay, I don't see them in the ball. Whereas this one is very different. Okay, I look at a typical point, a typical small dot. What do I see around me? A lot of guys, and then perhaps empty space. And then clusters around, okay? But you see the pictures that you see from a typical point of the point process and from a typical location of the Euclidean space are extremely different. And these two objects, the Palm probability and the stationary probability, they are really the way to characterize these differences, okay? And in all the applications that I will describe at the end, if I have time, it's very important to play with one or the other, okay? Good. So that's the object. And I want to give now a formal definition, which involves, actually there is a theorem which says that actually P, which is defined here, is a, in bijection, there is a bijective mapping on the set of probability laws on M between P0 and P0N. There is a bijection. And I will give the two definitions how to move from one to the other. So let's first, that's the mathematical definition. P0n of A is actually defined more generally as the following ratio. So you look at the, you take any B which belongs to the Borel sets of RD, and you look at all points Tn that belong to B, and such that STn of n has the property A, and you divide that by the expected number of points that fall in B. Okay, so that's the definition of the Palm probability of A. And for the converse, I have to define the Voronoi cell. That's the first object of really stochastic geometry, Voronoi cells of n, Okay, so it's the Voronoi cell Vn is the set of points y or locations y that belong to Rd, such that the distance between y and Tn is no more than the distance between y minus tk for all, and this should hold for all k in the integers. Okay, so this is the set of locations of the Euclidean space which are closer to the point nucleus Tn or point Tn than to any other. So perhaps you have seen pictures. I have some. Okay, so if you take a point process, so essentially you will have a bisector hyperplane between two points. Okay, and for every pair of points, you look at this bisector hyperplane. Okay, and this will define cells. Okay, so we look here at this area. Okay, so I think here this. Yes, so this is not affected by that. So this should be the cell of this point. Okay, it's an intersection of half spaces. So it will be a polytope, which is actually finite always when the point process is stationary. And so it's a convex cell which is associated with each point. Okay, good. And so these are the set of locations which are closer. So I should complete that perhaps by other points. Okay, so there will be an object like that. Okay, like this one, and this will this object will be, so the central one here will be the so let's highlight this one. Okay, this will be the Voronoi cell of that nucleus of that point. That's one of the points of the point process. So this is the set wise. Okay, and the inversion formula. It's a very beautiful formula. It dates from the 70s. Says that actually P of A is nothing else as the expectation under the palm, okay, of the integral on V0. So this is the cell of point zero. We are under the palm, so there is a point in zero, okay, of the function one that ST of M as the property A dt divided by E0n of the Lebesgue measure of V0. Okay, so this is the definition, the formal definition of the palm probability. Okay, so you can you have a systematic way to move from one to the other. Okay, so let me explain a little bit what it means. Because the first assumption that you might have in mind when you see the either this definition or the ergodic definition which I give, there would be a guess that actually P that P0n of A is simply the probability that n plus a point in zero has the property n. Okay? Because you remember what we did. Think of the ergodic interpretation. The ergodic interpretation, we move from point to point. Okay? And we look at those points in this ball. And then we shift the point process to make, when looking at point Tn, in such a way that the point Tn is at the origin. So there will always be a point at the origin. And check at whether it's seen from there, the point process has the property A. Huh? Yes?
So is this saying that these are, you see the properties are similar? We're assuming that they're somehow the same dimension? Are you still relating this to clusters?
No. I'm making a comment here. So I have given here the rigor, and now I make a comment that I will probably answer your question in a second. Okay, so this is the first guess. Okay, and this guess is wrong in general, but it is true for the Poisson point process. Okay, so this holds, this guess holds actually if and only if n is a homogeneous PPP. Okay, so the only point process where the palm probability is exactly the law of the point process with a point added at zero is the Poisson point process. Let me explain what it means in a concrete sense. Okay. I have my first world, which is P. So there is zero here, and there are points. So I look at d is equal to 1 to make a, okay, and I will number points this way, t0, t1, t2, and so forth, okay? Okay, so that's the vision of the point process, the Poisson point process on R. It looks like that. And so what is the chance that t1 is more than x? Okay, the first point on the right. This is the chance that the number of points in the interval 0, t1 is 0x is equal to 0. Okay, t1, the first point on the right, is more than x if and only if there are no points in the 0x interval. And what is this? This is e minus lambda x. Because I know that an interval of length x puts a number of points which is measure Lebesgue of this interval. Lebesgue measure of this interval, which is x times lambda. Okay, so the probability that an exponential Poisson random variable of parameter lambda x has no point is e minus lambda x. So this is an exponential of parameter lambda, this t1. Okay, and here there will be another independent exponential of parameter lambda as well, by the same argument. So the interval which contains the origin under P has length, mean length, 2 over lambda. Okay? The mean length of this interval, the quantity mean length of T1 minus T0. Okay? By this argument. Now let's look at the same thing, but I add a point in zero. Okay? I look exactly the same thing. I add a point in zero. And what the theorem that I just mentioned proves is that if I take the same realization of the point process N and I add a point in zero, what I see is the Palm version of the point process. Okay? And now, what happens? Now you look at the same interval, T1, T0, the interval which contains zero, okay? And so now, this is exactly the same thing. This is the exponential of parameter lambda. So this thing has mean 1 over lambda. Okay? So that's what it says. And so this is called the Buss paradox. It's called the Buss paradox. It's due to William Feller. So it says the following. You have the view, you have buses. These buses pass according to a Poisson point process over time. Okay? This is time. And every so and so, there is a bus, and the times of this bus form a Poisson point process. Okay? What is the Palm view? That's the view from a typical bus. Next bus has an exponential clock after it, and earlier bus has an exponential clock before it, okay? And each with a mean 1 over lambda. Now, that's the Palm version, the scene from a typical bus. Now, this is now the version of this point process seen by a typical time, or a typical observer. An observer arrives at zero and looks at the bus. Next bus has arrived an exponential of parameter lambda before, the former bus, and next bus also an exponential of parameter lambda independent. So the interval in which you fall as an observer of the bus process is twice the typical interval as planned by the bus company. Okay, right. This is called the, and this shows you the big difference and the very important aspect of understanding this Palm probability, how different. I already explained that with the cluster thing, okay, where the Palm view of the cluster point process was saying, oh, I see a big crowd around me, whereas the stationary was saying that, oh, it's pretty empty, okay. And here you see on a concrete example is that even for the Poisson point process that has no clustering, the Palm and the non-Palm have completely different local statistics. Huh? Good. So now I want to define my last object, which is a new way. Which so these things are from the 80s. Now, a quite recent result of 2003 on a new characterization of the palm probability. So these things are typically from the 70s and the 80s. Okay, so it's called balance allocation. And I hope to show you a balance allocation on my slides. So, what is this? I will give myself, so for all M, which is a counting measure, a mapping U, which to M gives U of M. And this U of M should belong to the support of M. And the interpretation is that I want to build a tessellation. I want to build a tessellation which will not be the Voronoi tessellation. It will be another tessellation. And it should have one very important property. What is a tessellation? It's a partition of RD into areas, into domains. And there is one domain for each point, Tn of the point process. Okay, that's of the counting measure. And actually, roughly speaking, a counting measure, a balanced allocation, will be a rule to allocate space to each point, to allocate a cell to each point in such a way that this cell has exactly the same volume for each point of the point process. Okay? In the earlier version, in the Voronoi, you can show that the mean cell volume is 1 over lambda. It's normal, okay? So that's easy to show. But, I mean, somebody who is isolated in a Poisson point process, there may be a big ball, he will have a big cell around him. And somebody who is in a big crowd, if there is a cluster of points, all these guys will have small cells. So in mean, in an average, everybody will have 1 over lambda, but some will be quite big in terms of the size of their domain or cell, and others are small. And what you want, a balanced allocation will be an allocation where exactly every point has a cell of volume 1 over lambda. Okay? And so this is the way to define it in a translation invariant way. So you have a mapping M, which will be understood as to whom location 0 in the configuration M is allocated. So it will belong to, so this will be my U of M. And this will, as I said, belong to the support of M. And what do I do for point X? Point X, M. So we'll do the following. I will do X plus U of SX of M. So this is the way to define something which is translation invariant, okay? So I take M, I want to know to whom, to which point to allocate X. Okay, so I put back X to the origin. X is a locus, it's a location of the Euclidean space. I apply my rule U, which tells me how to move the origin, and then the image, I shift it back of X. Okay, so this gives something which is a translation invariant allocation. So it means that the cells that I will build, if I shift the whole point process in a rigid way of T, the cells will follow. Okay, this is translation invariant tessellation. And there is the following theorem. Theorem is that for all ergodic point processes n, for all allocation rules, which is function U E0n of A is nothing else as the expectation of the quantity Su of M belong to A. Okay. So what it says is the following. You can view the palm probability of the event A as the following thing. There is something very special which will this function U. Okay, and this function U is a way to build a field or a domain or a cell for each point of the point process with exactly the same volume for all points. In a random setting, it's quite difficult, and I will explain how to do it. If you find such, if you provide me such such a U, then I look at the stationary version. Okay, this is P of the point process. I move the origin to the owner of the origin. Okay, namely, the origin is like a piece of land. The points are like farmers, if you want, of the point process. And each farmer is exactly the same amount of land, right? So I move the configuration to the farmer who owns the origin. Okay, and there I look at whether the property A is satisfied, and this is the PAN. And let me show that naive answers don't work. I will answer your question. A naive answer, let's look at the line. So, and let's look at the Poisson case. A naive answer would say, oh, let's go to the closest, that would be U. And you probably see why it doesn't work. Is there any chance that from this point, which is the closest to the origin, I see the palm? The answer is no, of course. Why is it so? Because I've told you that, I mean, the length of this interval is a gamma low of parameter 2 and lambda, right? The sum of two exponential. Okay? And so if you, from that point, I would see a Poisson point process, I know that on the left and the right, I would have exponentials. Okay, and this interval, one of the two intervals on the left or right, is has different law, so it can't be. And so, let me explain now how one builds this these objects, these balanced allocations. This is. Did you ever hear about the Gale and Shapley stable marriage problem? You did. Good. So. Excellent. So one uses a stable mariage between Lebesgue and Poisson, for instance. That's how the first paper was titled, okay? Namely, between the point process and the Euclidean space. So how does the stable marriage thing work? You have girls, N girls, and N boys. Each girl has a preference list, which is a permutation of the boys, okay? And each boy has a preference list. And you do a mapping between the sorry?
Do you order pizza of John's?
Yeah, thanks. You do an allocation, namely you find a bijection between the boys and the girls, and so you say that a pair boy-girl in this allocation is unstable if this pair is are not paired. They are not, I mean, associated by the bijection, and actually both the boy would prefer in his preference list that girl to the girl he's allocated to, and the girl would also prefer the boy in question than the one allocated to. Okay, because that's an unstable pair, and so one calls a stable marriage or stable allocation an allocation, then there are many, but there are some where no such instable pairs do exist. Okay, and you do the same for Lebesgue and Poisson. Okay, what you do is that you can show by applying the Gale and Shapley algorithm that you know that you can marry land and farmers according to Euclidean distance. Okay, the preference list of the farmer will be to have his land as close as possible, but he should have, if the density is 1, volume 1, this land. And the land also wants to go to the closest possible farmer. Okay, these are the preference lists. And you can marry Lebesgue and the Poisson point process, or more generally, any ergodic point process, like the ones I've seen, according to this stable marriage. Okay, and exactly everybody, every farmer has land 1 in terms of volume. And that's the way I want to show you pictures, if we have a few more minutes. of this stable marriage and a few objects that we saw to conclude the talk. But, so PC. So let's try to have the picture to conclude. PC. Okay, and I will show you this stable marriage of Lebesgue and Poisson, and show you what this means for. Yes, you had a question that I didn't answer. Yes.
So in the language of farmers and land.
Yes.
Worldwide desolation always ensures that a farmer lives on his land.
Yes.
Does the balanced competition
yes.
ensure that?
Yes. Yes, because the principle will be. I mean, if you can. So of course the proof, because you are in the infinite space, is technical. But the idea goes like that. So you start growing a ball at constant speed, okay, around you. And every user, every farmer does this, okay? And after a while, you enter in competition with another farmer, okay? Then you try to grow in another direction. And then you may be blocked. And then you will pass the boundary of the farmer's ground around you and try to expand as close as possible. And everybody does this, okay? But so we can prove, it's a very good question, but we can prove a certain number of things. So... okay, one can prove that actually any compact, first the land is not connex, okay, it's not connected, the land, I mean you have pieces of land here and there. For the Poisson point process, you may have pieces of land very far away, okay, but nevertheless the number of farms that hit any compact is finite, so it's a reasonable allocation, okay. Okay, good. So if we manage to see the stable allocation, the balanced allocation, I will. But it seems we have really problems with the. So he said C. Okay, so if you go to. There is only one GIF. Stable GIF, yeah. Please, yeah. Okay. So that's what I was telling you. So this is a Poisson point process. So you see the clusters, the centers, okay, which are the farmer's location, okay? And so, and then I'm describing here, so thank you. So you see, I mean, everybody should have land one, okay? So let's look at this fellow, for instance, here, who is squeezed. Okay, he has many farmers nearby. I mean, this one here. Okay, and you see if you did the color code. I mean, there is a piece of his land there. Okay, and so it's exactly the algorithm. The intuitive algorithm to prove that there, in this case, there is a unique solution. Every piece of land is owned by a given farmer, a unique farmer. Okay. So that's how it works. And so there is a PDF now which is MathU. So if you can close it. A PDF which is Math Undergrad. Yeah. Okay. And I will now show you in contrast the Voronoi. Okay. So we can. In contrast the Voronoi. Okay. So here is the Voronoi. Okay, so this is a Voronoi for a Poisson point process. And you see there are fellows which are sorted in clusters. They have smaller cells, and those who are more isolated, these are just the fluctuations of the Poisson point process. They have bigger land, okay? And so for that one, if you do the inversion formula, you have seen it, and the direct formula. But if you now take this more complex type of balanced allocations or way of building, then you have this very nice formula. So it says... If you take the earlier picture, you take the origin, you see whose is the farmer belonging to that to which this piece of land belongs, this piece of the Euclidean plane belongs, you move there, and what you see is the palm. And that's true for all point processes, provided you have ergodicity. Yeah. Because this construction, I've explained it how to do it roughly the picture wasn't a Poisson, but it works for any of the point processes that I have depicted. Okay, so I stop here. I show you one picture of the Boolean model. I did not had no time to, but okay. So this is something a bit different. So you have a Poisson point process, and you center random balls on the nuclei of the point or the points of the point process, and you take the union of those. And so there are quite deep questions to compute the Betti numbers. Because this is like a surface, right? Especially when you go to higher dimension, and you may be interested in computing the characteristic of this surface, how many connected components, how many holes, how many spherical holes, and things like when you go higher dimension. So this is an interesting marriage, I wanted to explain this, between algebraic topology and randomness, which would be to compute a Betti number per unit space, if you want, for objects of this type. Okay, so let's really break here.